grown up in the streets of small streets of Algeria, you know, selling sandwiches, tickets, lemonades. And it's an amazing, amazing experience for me. Our food and our culture, you dress the table with food. That's how we show our generosity. For me, the dish is the table. It's not a dish. I love to mix food. I love to mix flavors from fresh salads, from small pastries to dips, some like aubergine dip, chickpea dip, courgette dip. It's not one dish. It's not two. It's fill the table. I'm dreaming. I'm more hungry than I was than when I was a kid. And I have much more energy than when I was a kid. And I'm dreaming much more than when I was a kid. And I also wanted people to start eating Middle Eastern food, same way as they eat Italian food. I wanted to do the shawarma what Americans did to burger.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pack Talks. We have an interesting personality with us, Tony Kitus, the man who has moved from Algeria, running around the streets of Algeria, and now people are running around the streets to catch an awesome meal at his place in UK and parts of the world. We have got Tony Kitus. We will hear about his story, an amazing journey from reaching to UK with 70 pounds in his pocket and now having different chains of restaurants across the globe. And without much ado, I will invite Tony to take us through his journey. Welcome, Tony, to the show.
Hey, Vijay, thanks for having me. Hey, guys, I'm Tony Kitus. I'm the founder of Comptoir Libanais Group, a small restaurant chain. We are all over the UK, in Dubai, in Netherlands, and soon we're opening in Doha airports and Abu Dhabi airports.
To all the listeners and viewers, how I found out Tony. If you travel via Dubai airport, the Emirates terminal, you can find Tony's restaurant at terminal 3, the A-Wing. That's where the canteen of Lebanon, though you will read it as the name of the restaurant, is
Comptoir Libanais. It's a very difficult word to pronounce. It's French name. Yeah, it's Comptoir Libanais.
Colorful restaurant, which you will not miss because of the colorful way in which the restaurant has been designed. Amazing food. That's how I reached out Tony to just to pass my message. And then Tony has been very receptive in terms of agreeing for this interview. We will talk about food, restaurants, and he has written a book also. So we'll talk about that amazing book with a lot of recipes in that. You were in Algeria and then you moved to UK and now you have built an restaurant empire out there. Take us through your initial days in Algeria, wherein you used to be the eldest in the family and helping in the kitchen and picking up of cooking and putting up your own stall near a football stadium and selling your first set of stocks at when you are 8 years old. Take us through that journey.
I guess each of us has a journey. We all have our own story to tell to our friends, to our family, to in the future, kids, grandkids. I think my story, just like I like to say, like many other stories, to be honest, I'm the oldest of a family of seven, a humble family, amazing parents. We lived like nine of us in a three-bedroom, small three-bedroom apartment. My dad, my mom, my grandma, and my sister, five brothers. We were fortunate enough to live across the road from a football stadium. And at the time, my team, my local team, was one of the best teams in Africa. So whenever they play, it's a sellout. So it's a kind of, it wasn't just me, even my neighbors and some of my friends, they just go and, you know, to make a little bit extra money to wake up early in the morning, buy some tickets, because you know they always run out of tickets. Buy some extra, some tickets and sell them at small profits, and around noon when everything, all the tickets are finished, so now it's time to start selling sandwiches, maybe some lemonades, and that was really how I started. For me, that's how I started my life. Of course, I went to school as a young kid, but I've learned so much in school, so much at home, but the best and biggest experience is what you learn on the street. That's how I learned. That's how I grew up in the streets of, small streets of Algeria, you know, selling sandwiches, tickets, lemonades. And it's an amazing, amazing experience because you get to talk to everybody on the street. You just put small stall in the middle of the pavement and just people passing by, people you don't know, you chat to them, then eventually they recognize you, they become friends, you become regulars. So yeah, that's how really I was doing in Nigeria. I was studying, and when I was 18 years old, I was supposed to, I had my baccalaureate, the equivalent of A-level, to go to university. And I was supposed to go to university. I had my baccalaureate, and then I decided for the summer to go on holiday. And with a friend of mine, I said, oh, why not London? We didn't have much money. I had £70. I think we both had £70 each. Landed in London the first night. We want to make sure our money lasts forever. First night we slept in Victoria Station. And then for another couple of weeks, a few more weeks, in fact, we were squatting. And that's how really everything started. It's an adventure. When you are at that age, everything is amazing. It's an amazing experience you have. You discover a new place. You discover a new culture. You are in a city where you know nobody. You don't speak the language, but yet you feel part of it because London is so multicultural, so cosmopolitan. You have people from all around the world. I never felt that I was an outsider in London, although I only been there a few days. So, and I think that's really how my move from Algeria to London really came about.
Great. And if you can touch on the nuances of from where you picked up the cooking, did you pick up at home or did you go through a professional training? So how did that happen?
To be very honest, I think cooking obviously has a huge relation with food. We all love food. There's nobody in this world that doesn't eat. We eat every day. We need to eat to live. For me, I was never really been a chef. I was never trained. I was really never a chef. I just was, as a little kid, being in an Algerian family, a lot of food. The family, my mom, my aunts, my grandmas, there's always food around. And I always used to watch them, what they used to do. But at the time, I used to watch because I wanted to eat. So, but I think eventually, when I was in London, I realized that what I really want to do and what I really miss is hospitality, doing restaurants. And that's how I think bit by bit, I got into food. I'm a self-taught. It's not something I went to school or I was a chef before. It just bit by bit as learning. I'm still learning, to be honest. I learn about cooking and as much as I learn about everything else. And that's how really my relationship with food started.
Awesome. As you said, you moved to London when you are 18 with £70 and you spend a night in the station and then you manage to stay there. I was going through the content which is available online and I could understand that you started your first restaurant when you were 22. 18 to 22, 4 years. What were you doing and how do you end up actually deciding that, okay, let's go and start a restaurant, because it's not easy. At that age, when you're 22, it's a big decision. How did you decide that and what was the motivational factor and who actually helped you at that time?
To be very honest, as a kid, I was always a dreamer. I wanted to do things, wanted to do big things. Nothing scared me. And nothing worried me, nothing scared me. The word risk didn't mean anything to me. I think when I went to London, I went on holiday. I didn't go to stay, it was just an adventure. And I think what happens was, I think when I decided to stay, then my parents didn't want me to stay. They tried to force me to go back and live in Algeria, but I think my mind was made up. It took me a lot of persuasion for my parents, for me to go back and stay to Algeria. I was the oldest. I was supposed to go to university. I was the example for my brothers. I'm the big brother for the whole, for my brothers and sister. I think what happened was, is I think I needed my parents' blessing. It was important. As you know, in our culture, parents' blessing is very, very important. It took me a while to get that blessing and get all everything for them to say yes. I think the moment I felt they were happy for me to go to London and live in London permanently, that was a big, big decision for them. I think the moment I knew they had, I forced them to give me their blessing, if I'm allowed to say. And I think that's when I realized, okay, I'm supposed to go to university. I'm going to live in a country that technically I don't know anybody and I have no contacts. I have really no money and I'm alone. I'm really, really alone. I think that's when I felt like it's almost a voice inside me coming and saying, like, this is the challenge. This is the reality. In 4 or 5 years' time, all your friends will come out of university with one of them is doctor, engineer, pilot, setting up, you know, going to family business with a degree. And me, you know, I'm in a foreign country and I don't want to end up just in the tiny small jobs for the rest of my life. You know, it's almost, I had kind of, I benchmarked myself with my friends that I was supposed to go to university with. So by the time they come out of university with a degree, I'll be starting my own business. And it was clear from early on, it would probably be a restaurant. I think the moment I set that in my head, that was the dream. That was the dream, or that was my goal. That was my ambition. I was thinking about it every single day. But I was thinking about it. I was dreaming about it. I was desperate. I was obsessed with it. But I think what I had to do is, I know what I had to do. I made sure I was doing something about it. And I was working 16, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week to make sure I had enough money in order to open this restaurant. So technically, I probably were doing 90 hours a week on average. And I was going to all my friends that I used to work with me say, oh, if you don't want to work, if you want to go on holiday, let me know, I'll replace you. I want to make sure I was covering I was doing my job as also covering everyone else to make sure all I was doing is just work, and make the money. So technically, people say it is 4 years. But if you average 90 hours a week, you know, of working life, that's it ends up not that. 4 years. It's about 9 years. So imagine I was doing 9 years of work in 4 years. And I think for me, that's how really I was doing 90 hours. I was loving every minute of it. Looking back, 90 hours, it sounds hard. I'm thinking, has it been hard? I didn't feel it was hard. I was enjoying every moment. I was grateful to have the opportunity to work. I feel I was getting closer and closer to my dream. So yeah, it was, that's how really I started to, and that decision to open a restaurant wasn't just all of a sudden. I think the moment I decided that's it, this is London, is gonna be my home, which I felt it was my home the first day I arrived, forever. And that's how I mapped it up. That was the game plan.
Amazing, Tony. So the message was loud and clear, work, and dream big.
I think work, yeah, but absolutely. Dream and be obsessed with your dreams and work. There's no secret. I would never consider myself, people like, oh, you're smart. No, I don't consider myself that at all. I was hungry. I knew where I came from. And I needed to survive. I needed to do something about it. I was as simple as that. And then come when I was, you know, 22, I was working in this restaurant, work. And then one day I came to work, the restaurant was closed for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. It wasn't reopened. And I called my landlord. I said to him, look, I'd love to. I gave it a shot. It was probably the best call of my life. And then they rented me the space.
Wow.
So that's really how it started for me, my first restaurant. It was in 20, it was open. Well, I took the keys around just before the summer 93 and opened 29th of June, 1993.
So completing almost 30 years now.
That's when, yeah, almost 29 years. This will be my first restaurant.
Amazing. And what's the reason behind naming the restaurant the Canteen of Lebanon?
To be honest, I think for me, when I was working on this project, I needed the name, but I was focusing more on the ideas and everything, but I didn't have the name. So just as a reference, we just called it Comptoir Libanais as a reference for now. That said, when we eventually, we were going to give it the name. And then the name stuck in our head and he stayed Comptoir Libanais. But I think for me, because I wanted the place that, it's also a casual name. Also, I wanted the place that friendly, very casual, a friend for everybody, for students, kids, families, ladies that eat on their own without being, you know, feeling out of place, travelers, parents, grandparents, a nurse, a doctor, an engineer. I want a place where everybody would feel great in that space. I wanted to have an experience. I wanted to offer an experience for everyone. I wanted something for me, Comptoir. I wanted each corner of Comptoir represent an aspect of my life, whether childhood memories or memory that I have collected recently through my travel. As we all know, travel expands my creativity and my imagination. Wherever I go, I bring with me, I make sure I bring with me something to create a heaven for my customers. I always wanted to have that experience and people feel the soul. I didn't want it to be one of those restaurants with no soul. So I wanted the people, you know, to feel that the owner there is, I was present. Comptoir is full of experience. I want my customers to be embraced in a display of culture in particular. I want them to experience the places that have marked me without having them to travel. And obviously there's a lot of memories of my childhood back home in Algeria and also my travels. I travel all over the Middle East. You're talking about from Cairo, Tunisia, Morocco, Lebanon, Syria. I want to do obviously all those places I've been visiting. I've been learning about their food, about the culture, about anything to do with arts. And I wanted to, that was inside my head. And I wanted people also to live the same experience as me.
Then you went on to open 3 more chains of restaurants. One is a shawarma joint and 2 more. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, no, I think my first restaurants were more of a proper restaurant with a lounge. But also, again, all my restaurants, it's about the food experience. When I say about the food experience, the food has to be very important. The design has to be very important. The team, the service have to be important. The music, the entertainment, the whole atmosphere. And when people come with us, it's an experience. I want them to travel. Yeah, so I started with first one called the Levant, which is more Middle Eastern. They have belly dancers, they have entertainment. It's for me, it's like if someone that goes to the restaurant, he thinks they traveled somewhere. That was the first one. Then eventually came Comptoir, casual, for a place for everybody, affordable, not pretentious. Then I opened Shawam, which is basically a shawarma. I wanted to do the shawarma what Americans did to burger, eat it on a daily basis. a good shawarma, if someone that knows a good shawarma, shawarma is healthy. Really, really healthy when it's good. I train every day. Go to the gym whenever I have a competition and I'm on a strict diet. I go for 2-3 months just on protein, fresh salad, small piece of thin bread, and bingo. It's super healthy. So yeah, so that's how I basically what I try to do. I try to offer everything we do is the same. It's all about Middle Eastern food. But at the same time, I try to offer one of them is a restaurant experience, one of them is casual restaurant experience, the other one's kind of fast restaurant, because fast food unfortunately had a very good reputation being, because it's fast food, they think it's not healthy, it's junk food. Fast food, you know, and people think also if it's healthy, it's not delicious. I want to do fast, healthy food, but it's also very delicious.
You are absolutely spot on that. The moment we think of fast food, the next word comes out is junk food, because it's not good, it's not healthy, and it's all pre-packed. And they just put it on a oven and give it to you, so it never healthy. But shawarma has a different story altogether. We will fast forward your journey, and we will come and hit COVID. This was the time when 2019, almost 26 after you were in this business, that's when it came and hit you. So how did you manage to sail through that one and a half years?
I think obviously COVID hit everyone. It didn't, I wasn't going to be sitting there feeling sorry for myself. It hit everyone. And the first thing I had is, it's a shock. It's like a nightmare for everyone. Is this really happening? We never thought whatever is supposed to be a simple virus will put the world on its knees. The shock was overwhelming for everything on the business, because it's a huge responsibility. When you have like over 750 staff, 30 restaurants that you have to pay the rent. It was, I think one of the things we had to do is make sure we don't sit and wait what happens next. Together with the team, my business partner worked so hard in making sure the team is looked after. We need to negotiate with our landlords to make sure that they were supporting us in order to survive for the long term. I personally thought I made sure I was, despite the lockdown, everybody was down, everybody was depressed. I made sure that I was training every day. I was running, I was cycling, and I was walking. I could do up to 30, 40 kilometers a day to make sure that my head and I'm fit and eating super healthy. That helped me a lot. That really, really helped me a lot. And then it was an opportunity to reinvent yourself, to think outside the box. It could be an opportunity to know that you can't just wait and do nothing. You have to think what you want to do. How, in a business or anything else in life, how do you reinvent yourself for the next 5, 10, 20 years? That's what we had to do, thinking about the best ways to be ready when we come out of COVID. Nobody realized that it was going to be that serious. And we're still in it. We're still in the middle of COVID, by the way. The pandemic is still there. And even when the pandemic is over, the problem is not over yet, because the economy will take a very long time for it to recover.
During this period, you embraced technology and you came out with an app. How is the app doing, and what has been the response?
For me, obviously, I didn't come up with the app. I think the team, we were, with all honesty, we were behind. We should have embraced a lot earlier. I personally not very, unfortunately, I'm ashamed to say, I'm not very, tech savvy, but the team was pushing for it. We made sure we did it. It's a long way to go. The early adapters are the ones that are enjoying the benefit. To reap the benefit of that, it takes a while. You need to keep doing some changes. Is this working? Is not working? And bit by bit until you find what's working for you. Still early days, but it's working well. Just wish we did it earlier.
It's always the case in terms of whenever something clicks, you will always think that we should have done this earlier.
True.
Yes. So having said that, since you are thinking that you should have done this earlier, now we can see a lot of, in the last 2 years, a lot of digital transformation happening. A lot of people are running behind augmented reality. And then now with a lot of contactless transaction happening, people have seen talking about robot restaurants. So it has been there in the industry for 4, 5, or 7, 8 years, but more and more people are thinking about this. When some customer comes and sits on a table with the help of augmented reality, he can see what is going to come on his table, some features, things like that. So have you got anything on your mind for that now currently?
I think technology, to be honest, will always keep developing more and more and more ideas. Whoever comes up with an idea, it was an idea probably he thought about it 5 years earlier or 10 years earlier, before the idea comes into action. It has been proven technology works. Technology is a solution to many, many businesses, and it has changed the life of many people. The problem with technology is not cheap. Technology is very expensive. Unfortunately, especially for restaurants, for the restaurant industry, not many people that have the kind of money to embrace this expensive technology. You know, you can think of the likes of McDonald's. They can afford to really spend millions and millions on technology, but now it's bit by bit becoming affordable. As for the robots in restaurants, I think it will happen. You know, you have robots in hospitals, they're operating. This is the most complex thing in the world to save life, but it's robots. You have robots in many industries, in car factories, but I think it's also a matter of time before you see them. There are robots that can't work in restaurants for simple things, but eventually restaurant will embrace the technology more and more, and they will embrace robots. I know it could be controversial. People say, I'm going to a restaurant to be personal. Yes, but I think eventually it's a matter of time before people will accept it. It will become normal.
At some point in time, people will understand that this is also the normal part of life now. Tell me about the book that you have written. I could manage to read, I would say, some 15-20 recipes when I was having the food at the Dubai airport. The way in which you have explained the features, the textures of the food, how it has to be prepared, you put it in a very simple manner. So why you decided to write a book and picked up a set of recipes? So any thoughts behind that?
Yeah, no, I think in terms of books, I always wanted to do a cookbook. I never realized how complex and how hard it is. And I'm not going to pretend it was easy. It was very hard because it's something else. It's not something I'm used to. Of course, I did 3 cookbooks. When I did my first one, I had to call a friend of mine who I used to work with. His name is Dan Leppard. He's an amazing guy. He's an amazing baker. He did many books before, and he worked with so many celebrity chefs. He helped them do books. And then I said to him, look, Dan, I wanted to do a book. He said to me, when you're ready, just let's do it. Then I remember one day I just called him up, said, Dan, I think I'm ready now. And I think that's how it really started. I wanted him to hold my hand. But at the same time, I knew exactly what I wanted in the book. I wanted some very basic, humble, traditional, yet with some new ideas. I didn't want it to be like very modern kind of cookbook. What I wanted to do is a cookbook for everybody. But first and foremost is to introduce Middle Eastern food to the Western world. I wanted them to see the real and the authentic Middle Eastern food, not the revisited, the kind of fusion Middle Eastern food. And that's how really it started. I wanted to use a lot of, in our food, you know, we love meat. However, we also have so many dishes that are vegetarian, they are vegan. You don't need, sometimes I eat for days without even having meat, and I don't even miss it. And I tend to forget. So I just wanted people to see how humble it is to eat Middle Eastern food. You can have some easy to make at home. It's cheap, it's healthy. It's simple. And I also wanted people to start eating Middle Eastern food, same way as they eat Italian food. That is really my goal. I wanted to enter people's home with our cookbook. I wanted them people to, obviously, I felt like I was promoting our food and our culture. That's exactly what it was for me. It was never been something I was motivated other than doing something to make people discover our food and our culture.
Great. I think if people can get a copy of your book and read those recipes, it's very nicely, as you
Amazon.
Said. Amazon, yes. Maybe let me see if I can put a link to that also in the video when we put it up.
You can put the link, yeah.
Yes, yes.
The 3 cookbooks.
Yeah.
So, okay. Get it.
Since you mentioned 3 cookbooks, I know it's going to be a difficult question, especially for a person who cooks a lot of food. Which is your favorite starter, entree, your main dish, and the dessert? So if you want to pick one dish for each, which is going to be your favorite ones?
Nijay, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I got a brother.
Do you have kids?
Yes.
How many?
I got a daughter.
A daughter. Right. Yeah, so you have a brother.
I understood from where you're coming.
If someone goes to your mom and dad says, who's your favorite son? What did he say?
He will choose both.
You're asking someone who loves food, what's your favorite dish? I love everything. I love every single dish. But I think for me, our food and our culture is food that is almost like you dress the table with food. That's how we show our generosity. It's not one dish, it's not two, it's fill the table. It doesn't matter whose family you go to. You know, a humble family, middle-class family, all of them, whenever you receive someone is with food. So for me, you know, this is how I eat, I share. You know, for me, the dish is the table. It's not a dish. I love to mix food. I love to mix flavors from fresh salads, from small pastries to dips, some like aubergine dip, chickpea dip, courgette dip. Yeah, and stews. So I love so much food. It's very difficult. So I know my son boring. I don't know what's my favorite dish. I just like everything. And obviously, as you know, our culture is just like yours, is a very generous culture. You get, whenever you visit someone's home, Algeria, Morocco, the Middle East, they force feed you with food. And whenever you go, if you get the opportunity to go, or anybody goes to, you know, Middle Eastern house as a guest, they would never walk away from it hungry. You know, there's so much food. If you are 10 of you, then they would make food for 30, 40. If you are two of you, they make food for 10 people. And it's never wasted. The moment you eat, they force you to eat more and more. And when you finish, you can no longer can eat it, take the food with you to your family. That's how it works in our culture.
Wow.
So yeah.
In India, we say that Aditi Devo Bhava, the guests are the gods. Similarly, the part of the world that you come from, the same concept, you take care of the guests in the best possible manner and make sure that they don't go out of your house hungry. So that's amazing, amazing, Tony. So Tony, if you have to describe this whole last 28, 29 years of your journey in one single line, what would be your message?
Difficult. It's like a dream. You put a dream in your mind as a young kid, and then you keep dreaming. Because every time you dream about an apple, just as you're about to have the apple to put it in your mouth, you're already dreaming about the banana. As you're eating the apple, you're already dreaming about the banana. Then you move on to the banana. As you're eating that banana, you're thinking about the pineapple. So the dream keeps moving on. I feel like I'm living my dream, but yet I'm still dreaming in a big way. That doesn't mean I feel like I achieved my dream. Because no, I'm living a dream, but I don't think I achieved my dream yet. That's how it feels to me. Wow. I'm hungry. I'm dreaming. I'm more hungry than when I was a kid. Then I have much more energy than when I was a kid. Then I'm dreaming much more than when I was a kid.
Wow.
I don't want to stop dreaming.
If I could capture it, it's like dream, achieve, dream again, and achieve again.
I don't feel like I achieved, by the way.
Wow.
You know, when I remember when I first opened my first restaurant, I was so obsessed. Every morning, the first thing I think is that restaurant. Before I sleep, last thing I think is I dream of that restaurant. And whenever I feel like, you know what, work is maybe soon, I dream about that restaurant. So, but the moment, the first day I opened that restaurant, I stopped dreaming about the restaurant. And I just wanted to dream more. You know, I'm very fortunate. I feel blessed. I'm very grateful. But I just don't stop dreaming. And with all honesty, I'm not trying to be humble, but I feel like I just started. I know maybe someone else will say, oh, look at him. He has this. And if he's just started, honestly. Because I know other people that achieved so much. And for me, that's how I look at.
Very interesting words that you have said, Tony. You are moving from one stone to another. It's like keeping one leg on the stone and looking for the next stone from where you can move.
Well, 100%. And I think for me, I think it's also about passion. Whatever you do in life, there's two ways you see it. Very hard or very easy. Obviously, there is a fine balance. If you choose the easy part, it's not easy because it's easy, because you're determined and obsessed, you want to achieve it. It's very hard because you think it's hard. For me, you know, because I'm so passionate, because I'm so much love what I do, even though when times where there's a lot of, don't get me wrong, I don't see it. A lot of people say, oh, look, you know, you achieved so much. You came with to London with 70 pounds and all of a sudden you have, and now you have 30 restaurants. And hold on. If it took me 30 years to achieve this, these 30 years in terms of hours, or if you count it that way, it's about 60 years. It took me 60 years to arrive where I am today. So I just think for me, I just see it as you really have to be, you know, love what you do. Because when you love what you do, then it doesn't become work. There will always be problems in anything you do. And it comes, you know, you arrive at a certain stage of what you do in business is solving problems. Problems will always be there. There's no business that doesn't have problems. Problems will always be there. But, you know, you need to make sure that you're obsessed with your goal. And make sure, that's also very, very important, while I'm talking to you now, it's not about me. I speak on behalf of the team, the past team, the current team, the people that, you know, because everything, there's no business that can succeed without a team. And the team is probably more than 100% of any business.
Absolutely, Tony. Absolutely. You are bang on that in terms of giving the credit to the team, and that to the, you were talking about the current, past. So all said and done, somebody has to succeed. The team has to stand with them strongly and make sure that the support is really good.
100%. If there's any business in this world, that has succeeded, and it is because 100% the support of the team, of the good team.
I was reading one of your interviews, and I saw that you had mentioned you have a dream of seeing around 1,000 Lebanese restaurants in the United Kingdom. How soon do you think that that's going to happen?
I know I have been misquoted in that interview, and so many other magazines picked it up. When I said that, what I meant, it was in London, in the UK, there's about less than about 150 or 180 Lebanese restaurants all over the UK. Not
US.
Not mine. It was only ours, like only about 35. But my dream was to see 1,000 restaurants, Lebanese and Middle East restaurants in London. But I'll never stop dreaming. You know, you have the likes of Starbucks have 36,000 stores. If someone can do something, you can do it. Anyone else can do it. If you dream big enough, why not?
Keep moving ahead.
So, yeah. Keep moving, keep dreaming, and be obsessed.
That's great. And what are your future plans? Do you have anything in immediate next year's time? You spoke about Abu Dhabi and Doha. What after that? Anything you have major plans after?
You know, I think obviously we're still, as I said, we're still in the middle of the
COVID.
Of COVID. We need to be very, very careful. We can't just plan ahead because nobody planned COVID and boom. It's affected every business. So I think what's important for us is we look at taking opportunity by opportunity. We have, as I said, we're opening in Doha in a few months' time. We're also opening in Stansted Airport in London in a couple of months' time. We're opening in Abu Dhabi. And we're also working on other opportunities that it's very early to talk about, but we never stay still. We're trying to think about different ideas of opening more and more places to spread the love of Lebanese and Middle Eastern food and culture.
Amazing, Tony. When I heard and from you now, and when I read your story of Algeria and moving to UK, and now you spoke about football, the stadium right in front of your house, I could relate your journey to Riyad Mahrez. from Algeria to UK, making it big on English Premier League. So he made big in football, and you are making waves in the restaurant chain industry.
No, obviously the comparison. I'm a big fan of Riyad Mahrez. I'm a big fan of players. I'm close to a few Algerian and Moroccan football players in the UK. And I think we have slightly different, definitely Riyad Mahrez is amazing. His journey, his performance, he's always still hungry. He's a very humble guy, very simple. I know some people think he's not, but the ones that know him, he's a very, very simple guy. But I think we're very different. I'm actually so happy I'm in a restaurant business, not in football. And I would hate to be a football player. Doesn't matter who you, if you are Zidane or if you are Riyad Mahrez, because they have the shortest career in the world. Absolutely. Retire at 30. I want to retire at 99.
You just told me that you just have started after 30 years in your journey.
100% for them. And I think, you know, you talk to football players and they always, you know, they need to think, what are they going to do? All their life, they've been dreaming about football players when they were a kid. And then bit by bit, they struggle, they work hard to achieve that. Then boom, everybody wants their attention. Everybody talks about them, everybody likes them. Then overnight, they're getting less and less and less and less attention. And it's a tough job, by the way. It's the thing that they've been passionate about all their life. It stops at 30. That's why I said, I love my job. It's not a job.
You will never retire. And looking at the way in which you have been talking and the passion with which you have been describing things, I think you have just still going back to your 18-year-old self, and you're going to start again. And post-COVID, maybe after a couple of years, maybe I think we will see another Tony a teenage Tony coming back.
It's all in the head. Maybe I'm growing in terms of age, but mentally I'm still the same. Yes. 18-year-old. So.
Yes, I can see that. Just going back to your Doha thing, are you opening just before the Qatar World Cup or after that?
No, we're opening before the World Cup. We're going to open in a couple of months' time. We were opening anyway, but we made sure we're going to open before the World Cup.
Wow, amazing. So a lot of people across the globe can see your restaurant there.
Absolutely. Amazing. It's a fantastic location. Amazing. It's also another, for me, it's also a dream to start opening international level. I still think about myself as it's someone else. But it's still a job for me. It's not, I don't have the time to think about anything else. The moment we open one restaurant, we think about the next. And while we're thinking about the next, we need to make sure the current restaurant we open is surviving and is doing well, because it's an experience. You know, we want to make sure the food industry is, I'm sure the other industries are hard, but restaurant need to make sure that all the time, you give the best service to our customers.
Great, Tony. So, it was great talking to you, Tony. We were listening to the last 40-45 minutes to Tony, who spoke about giving a great experience to the customers. Think big, dream big, keep moving ahead, and definitely...
And be obsessed.
And be obsessed. Be obsessed. Thank you, Tony, for being on the show. You have shared a lot of positive vibes, and I think the viewers and the listeners will definitely pick up a lot of positive vibes, and they will also keep moving ahead and be obsessed with what they do and what they love.
100%.
Thank you, Tony.
Peace and love.
Thank you.